Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Bowman.
And I'm Dave Mazza.
And you're listening to Voices from the Edge. We are very pleased to have in the studio with us this morning Trish Tillman, who's the program director on the Equity Initiative at Multnomah County Health Department.
Yes, that's correct.
Excellent, excellent. Welcome to the studio, Trish.
Thank you.
And so Trish and I have been spending a lot of time together because her and I share a passion around eliminating disparities in health outcomes in communities of color. And so Trish, I understand that Multnomah County has a huge initiative. They've been really focused on this effort. And so if you would be kind enough to tell our listening audience, what's this initiative about?
So the Health Equity Initiative started actually last year. We had our kickoff in March of 2008. And it basically is the culmination of a lot of work that's happened within the health department to try and address health disparities within various communities of color. And then as our Multnomah County Chair Ted Wheeler was elected, part of his actual campaign platform was on eliminating disparities and promoting equity. And he said, you know, as Portlanders, we think of ourselves as very progressive people.
Right.
We believe in equality and justice. And yet, when you look at the data, it doesn't match. You can still predict, that certain populations are going to die younger and they're going to carry more health problems and they'll have less economic attainment and poor educational outcomes. And so we really need to look at ourselves as a community and see, you know, really are our actions matching with our spoken values. And so that's why he was behind that, and the board of Multnomah County was behind supporting the Health Equity Initiative.
And so when you say that Chair Ted Wheeler and the Board of County Commissioners are all behind this, does that mean that they've invested resources in trying to eliminate these disparities?
Yes. Yeah, so we actually have been funded now for a couple years to look at what are the societal causes of health inequities. And, you know, the approach that we're taking is that healthcare helps people to get better once they're sick.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare doesn't necessarily prevent people from getting sick in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
People
right.
get sick because of where they live, because of the access to food that they have, or their access to exercise, their ability to live in a community that's free of toxins. And
mm-hmm.
so they're really supportive of, and have been supportive of, us shifting our focus
mm-hmm.
to more, what are the social causes of health problems? What are the social policies that can be put in place to promote health, a healthy community in the first place?
So if you want to join us in this conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so, of course, my organization and many other healthcare advocates are in Salem constantly talking about the need for universal healthcare. We got to make sure everybody gets healthcare. But based on what you just said, if we put everybody into the current system, what we're going to still have is poor health outcomes in communities of color.
Yeah.
And so what do we need to do? While Multnomah County has a focus, the state has lost its focus on actually attempting to eliminate health disparities. Because I remember way back in the old days when I was in the legislature, there was actually a task force in place. Every legislative session, department heads had to come in and say, what dollars are you investing? What illnesses, what issue areas are you focusing your resources? Are you having an impact? Are you making a difference? And that went away when Dr. Kitzhaber went away.
As far as I know, I wasn't involved in that commission, but we did receive the report that
mm-hmm.
came out of the task force, and then it hasn't really been clear exactly what has been moving forward since then. One thing that I'm excited about is several of us from Multnomah County and other advocates for people with disabilities
mm-hmm.
and lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender folks and different communities of color had the opportunity to participate in the Oregon Health Fund Board
mm-hmm.
Process, which is looking at how do we restructure healthcare access for Oregonians. And so that committee, the Health Equities Committee, actually came out of a recognition that we needed to look at equity as we look at how we restructure.
Mm-hmm.
And the Health Equities Committee came up with a number of recommendations, not only for how to encourage more people to have access to the health care that's going to be available, but really starting to look at what are some inequities that are happening within our healthcare system, and then what are some things that need to be in place to help healthcare systems connect with the community-based organizations that do look more upstream.
That's right.
So, you know, it's impossible to have a conversation nowadays without referencing the economic meltdown and the subsequent crunch it's putting local governments in, and Multnomah County obviously
especially,
is facing a serious budgetary crisis. What sort of things is the initiative looking at to sort of address, you know, these front burner issues that are being generated by the economic crisis? Is clearly, you know, like the social and environmental impacts on health are going to only be exacerbated by the economic downturn. So are there things that are sort of being put up, you know, moved up to the front of the list to try to address the sort of crisis we're in?
You know, one of the frustrating things is that as we shift, this is really a paradigm shift for public health, for looking at how we do policy. And so I think in some ways we are kind of behind that curve. We would love to be able to provide to our policymakers an equity tool so that they could look at the budget decisions that they're making or the program decisions that they're making through that lens of equity and seeing, you know, we know that if we have population-wide approaches, everybody might benefit, but it doesn't address the disparities. So how can they target their resources? We don't have that tool yet. That's something that we're still developing. So I think we've been asked for it, you know, for this year's budget process. We don't have it. We hope to have it for next year's process. But as we start to look at policy and how we shift upstream, we are seeing departments within or programs within the health department start to shift how they focus their work so that instead of trying to have all our work focus, for example, on the effects of asthma and children with asthma. And there's huge costs associated with hospitalization, with medication management. The environmental health program is starting to look at how do we involve ourselves in housing policy. So that and it doesn't take more resources. It just is a shift in how we currently do the work that we're doing. So looking at how do we have policies like what the city of Gresham implemented, where there's now going to be proactive housing inspection for a multi-unit housing. So low-income tenants don't have to complain. They don't have to, I mean, they can still complain if they need to, but, you know, it's not a complaint-driven process. There will be that opportunity to proactively work with folks who have multi-unit housing to make sure that they're, you know, having housing that's decently heated and has good airflow so that people aren't going to be exposed to the same kind of asthma triggers. So that's an example of, you know, it didn't take additional resources to move into that policy direction.
In that same vein, I mean, looking at some of the overviews and looking at that report card that was the department put out, well, I guess, last March. I mean, one of the numbers that jumped out at me was that African Americans are 6 times more likely to die from homicide, which, you know, is an appalling number, but I guess many listeners might say, well, why is the health department tracking homicides?
Well, that is actually, I think, one of the major contributors to why African-American men live on average shorter lives. And I think we should all be concerned about that because as individuals, regardless of our race or ethnicity, we all have the capacity to contribute to our society and to our economy. And if someone is, you know, losing their life through violence or through any means, you know, early on, they don't have that capacity to contribute to our community. So it is a public health issue. Violence is a public health issue. And we're concerned by, you know, whatever is causing death or injury and disease in our community.
So, Trish, I know last year did a series of showings of this video, Unnatural Causes, and one of the pieces of that video that really stuck out for me was how immigrants are relatively healthy when they come into this country, but the longer they're here, the less healthy they become. Could you talk a little bit about why that is? I mean, what happens to people once they get to the United States?
That the American way.
Yeah.
The documentary series is called Unnatural Causes, Is Inequality Making Us Sick?
Right.
I'm sorry. The focus on that particular section of the documentary is it's called Becoming American. And so the question is America making us sick?
Right.
And what is happening, one of the things that they really focus on in that documentary is the issue of power and powerlessness and chronic stress and community connectedness. So things that you aren't going to get, you know, in a clinical visit.
That's right.
It's really what happens as you interact with your world. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, this is one of my learnings over the time that I've been working on this project is that second-class citizenship, which has been experienced by African Americans, has been experienced by Native Americans, has been experienced by any marginalized group, has a huge impact on your health. And the exciting thing about the documentary is they actually look at health on a cellular level. So you feel like you're kind of back in biology class, except your biology class was never this good.
Right.
But they look at like how your hormones actually respond to that chronic stress, to the feeling of being a subordinate person in society, and that that actually constricts your veins and, you know, can lead to some of the things that we see happening in African-American communities and Native communities, and then as people assimilate to the American culture and then take their place along the color line,
right,
then their health outcomes start to look like the way our society is set up.
Right.
So it's very predictable based on who has the power in our community, in our society, who's going to live the longest, and who has the least power is going to have the shortest lifespan. So it's very interesting the way that they can tie through our cells.
That's right.
Life expectancy, quality of life, to where we fit in the social hierarchy.
I know, it's really fascinating when you think that, you know, because of course we get told that, you know, it's your fault, right?
Right.
If you're in poor health, it's because of something you didn't do, right? So you didn't take care of yourself, you didn't go to the doctor, you know, we don't think about, well, if you didn't have any money, you know, there's a reason why you didn't go to the doctor. If you don't have health care, you can't go to the doctor. But what you're saying is that the society that you live in plays a role in whether or not you're going to have a good health outcome.
And that's probably the primary role is the society. So one of the things that we can look at is, like, how do we compare as the United States to other countries?
Right.
And we know we spend, like, by far the most per capita on health care.
That's
You know, for the other things that we purchase in our consumer society, we expect to have a return on our investment, right? So if you spend the most money on a car, you want the best car. Well, we spend the most money on healthcare, but we rank 29th in the world for health outcomes. So we're not getting a return on our investment. And countries that have higher rates of smoking, like Japan, higher rates of drinking, like Germany, have better health outcomes. So it's not about, and I'm not like a proponent of,
I was
going to
say,
you're
advocating smoking and drinking.
I'm not doing that. I'm just saying that there are other mediating factors we neglect to invest in as a country.
And so what's the plan? How do we, so now we have this data. We know that there are a lot of factors that come into play, mostly environmental factors that impacts people's health. So what's the plan for how we actually change health outcomes so that everybody in our community becomes healthy?
Right. Well, what we did over the past year was go out to the community and have dialogues using the Unnatural Causes documentary. And we engage community members in identifying what were some policy solutions that people thought would, based on what we know, promote health in our community.
Right.
And so from what we heard, we went back to the community and then asked them to help us prioritize.
Right.
And the way that we organized what we heard was, one, we need to look at public policy. So, for example, the Oregon Health Fund Board, all of their those recommendations are being moved now through the legislature in terms of public policy. there are other policies that we can look at, like how do we fund and develop more affordable housing? It's, you know, typical conversation, cable conversation. How do we invest in local farms and have more farmers markets and more access to local food? Those kinds of public policies we can influence, some of which we can influence, some of which Multnomah County can take care of, some of which the city of Portland can take care of. And mm-hmm. they're actually trying to, as they do their comprehensive plan, include a health and an equity lens in their plan so that we can have a healthy city of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one piece, public policy. The other piece is organizational development. So as local government, Multnomah County has a responsibility for policies external, but we also need to look at how do we conduct our own business? How do we work internally? So we're looking, right now we're doing a set of different projects to make sure that we are being able to promote equity internally as well as externally. And we think that, you know, major employers, other local governments can do the same thing. Community organizations can do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have diversity on your board? Mm-hmm. Do you have diversity in your staff? Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities for people to move up a career ladder? Mm-hmm. Those are important pieces of promoting equity within organizations.
That's right.
Then the third piece, which I think is probably the most essential, is a focus on community empowerment. So right now we're working on building our capacity to work with advocacy groups like Oregon Action, like the Coalition for a Livable Future, like the Center for Intercultural Organizing, to support those groups who are able to do community building, community advocacy, leadership development. And so that, to me, is the most essential piece, is that the people who are most impacted by inequities, the people who have the least access to power, are able to become leaders in advocating for policies that will improve their communities.
Well, and you know, that is really the most difficult piece to do, because as someone who sits at a lot of those tables, and I know you sit at a lot of those tables as well, and there are a lot of good-meaning people who just don't, it's not part of their thought process about equity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's normally left to the person of color, the one person of color who's sitting at the table, to go, but what about, and how come, and we need to add, and it's an ongoing battle. I mean, and so having strong people at the table is fine, but then I'm always concerned when we say we want community at the table, how their voices are marginalized and how they really don't receive the support that they need to be strong advocates at those tables. And so it's always that constant battle with very well-meaning, you know, folks who, you know, want to do good work, but we haven't expanded their mind to the point where they understand that they're the advocates at the table. So it's not just enough to have people of color sitting at the table, but how do we get the folks that are in those power positions to actually take on the mantle of saying, we've got to fix this, and it's our problem as well as the people of color who we're trying to bring to the table.
Right, and I think that's really where the rubber meets the road, where, as you said, well-meaning people, that kind of progressive Portland, needs to think about how does doing things the way we've always done them, which is, you know, pretty typically nice, progressive, how does that just reinforce institutional privilege?
That's right.
So even, and I think that's, again, why organizational development is so essential, because if we have the same people sitting in those places of power, even if they're nice people, I think in general, people have great hearts and good intentions, but sometimes that means giving up your seat that someone else can take it.
Yes.
And so really being able to look at, like, okay, so if we're talking about equalizing power, it's sort of like, you know, someone says everybody wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to die.
Right.
Someone's got to give up their seat at the table.
That's right. And so we're talking to Trish Tillman, project manager for Multnomah County's Health Equity Initiative. And we're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO. Hello, caller. Welcome. Good morning, caller. Are you there? Okay, hopefully you'll come back. We don't want to lose you. The number to call, and we promise not to lose you. We'll hold Richard accountable if we do. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And so we know that I'm so glad that you mentioned that it's bigger than just who do you see as your healthcare provider, whether you get into your appointments or not. It's really the community that we live in determines the health, the quality of our health, right, mm-hmm. as a community. And I think that's something that most people just don't make the connection to. So it's the transportation system, you know. Are you on public transportation? Are you living in over a freeway? Are you living in public housing that has mold and has other health other things that impact your health? All those things play a role in our health care. So this is really a new phenomenon, right? Because it's like, mm-hmm. I haven't heard anybody other than you actually really connect those dots in such a clear way to say that, yes, it is about what you do, how you take care of yourself, but in addition to that, the biggest factor is where you live and how you live.
How you live.
You know, in view of the fact that communities of color are moving into different areas, it's not just in Portland. I mean, Washington County has a quite substantial Latino population and mm-hmm. South Asian population. Are county health departments in other areas sort of starting to look and think along the same lines as Multnomah County is around these issues? Or is there outreach being done to coordinate?
Well, so on a local level, the place where I've had the most conversations is actually Clark County, which serves Southwest Washington, mm-hmm. Vancouver area. And I think this is something where we would look to the state, either the Office of Multicultural Health mm-hmm. or, you know, other entities within the state of Oregon to do that work of organizing counties. I actually think, I'm not sure what the county is for Eugene,
Lane.
Mm-hmm. They also have an equity initiative, and I think also in Corvallis, which is Benton County. Mm-hmm. But in terms of in the metro area, I haven't heard a lot. And our focus is on Multnomah County, and that's mm-hmm. Plenty of work. So we haven't had that opportunity to reach out to the other counties.
And so I guess the big question, because I know I can just hear some of our listeners out there thinking, why should I care? If I'm not a person of color, why should I care that these mm-hmm. equities exist in these communities? We've got small people of color populations, and so does that mean white people are healthy in this community? And if they're healthy, then why should they care about this very small number of people who are getting bad health outcomes?
Right. Well, the way that our society is structured, it affects everybody. Mm. And so when there was a really significant study that was done called the Whitehall Study, and this happened in England, and they were looking at civil servants. So they were all employed by the government. They all had the same health care, and they worked on a civil service ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And so they looked at health outcomes over time for all these civil servants. And it's, you know, more homogenous, I mm-hmm. think. They could control for race. And so what they found was that the people at the top, the executives, had the best health outcomes. The people who reported to the executives had worse outcomes than the executives, but better outcomes than the middle managers. And the middle managers had worse health outcomes than the, you know, managers above them, but better outcomes than the people below them. So what they showed was that it's actually a ladder. It's a gradient.
Wow.
A social gradient. So it affects everybody. If you're middle class, and this plays out, we have some data that we're pulling together where we can actually map life expectancy and match that with income mm-hmm. in Multnomah County.
Right.
And so we can see even in Multnomah County, if you're middle class, your health outcomes are worse than if you're upper class. And if you're lower class, your health outcomes are worse than if you're middle class. So it affects everybody. It's not just race and ethnicity, but when you put that lens of racism on the top, if you're a middle-class African-American, your health outcomes are much worse. In fact, it gets worse as you move up as people of color.
Wow.
The disparity grows so that your health outcomes, if you're wealthy and black, are significantly worse than if you're wealthy and white.
Wow.
And so when we look at different specific health outcomes, for example, nationally, infant mortality, there's a difference between black and white. It's a two-fold difference. But college-educated African-American women have worse birth outcomes than high school dropouts who are white. So education doesn't is not a protective factor.
Uh-huh.
But white high school dropouts have worse health, baby, you know, for their babies have worse health outcomes than people, white people who are college educated. So this is just one of the issues is like, is that
right.
just?
Right.
Is that fair? Should we be able to predict health outcomes based on your income? Should we be able to predict health outcomes based on your race?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's kind of the big issue about
that's
why
the big
that
picture.
Affects
that's right.
everybody.
Mm-hmm.
One more reason to dislike the rich.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, caller. Good morning, Erica. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Hi.
I would just like to say that this isn't so much on equality or equity of health care, but the availability, because I've worked places where that gave prescriptions, and there would be people that were coming from Gresham,
right.
and they didn't have a car, so they had to spend $50 to take a taxi to go to Providence. And then, I mean, and it was like an all-day, it would be an all-day
event.
Adventure for them. And then they were at my store at night getting their prescription, and then they were going to have to spend $50 to go back to Gresham. So I just want to know about how could hospitals be put in areas where people have better access to them, and or just I guess they would be healthcare clinics and that kind of thing. And I'll take your reply offline.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Well, I think that one of the things that you won't get a lot of pushback on is that our healthcare system in America needs fixing.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a healthcare system that operates within that kind of free market economy, right?
That's
healthcare
right.
becomes a commodity, and mm-hmm. so hospitals then can look at, you know, where's the need, but they also need to be able to keep their doors open and keep people paid.
That's right.
And there's a lot of high cost providers and high cost equipment, and
mm-hmm.
so their finance, the way that they think about finances is far beyond the way that I spend my time.
That's right.
Thinking. However, I do think that, you know, that what the caller pointed out is that we don't have a health system that is easily accessible. It's not equitable, and it depends on what kind of money you have, you know, what kind of health care you receive. So that's something that other countries have said is not the way they want to operate.
Mm-hmm.
They want to provide healthcare because people are human.
Right.
Quality healthcare because, and that's an investment in the people in their country.
That's right.
As opposed to healthcare as a commodity, which I think, you know, comes from, you know, there's a long history of that
mm-hmm.
just in terms of the way that we orient our economy in the United States.
Yeah, we certainly have a capitalist society, but it's also interesting because, you know, now that our capitalistic society has kind of crumbled, right, we actually have the opportunity to do it right. And so what my hope is that with all the new investment of healthcare resources, that we really start looking at healthcare being about how do you keep the community healthy
mm-hmm.
versus who makes profit and who doesn't, right? And, you know, and there are a lot of people that hate when I say this, but I continue to ask the question. I don't understand why we have insurance companies, right? Because they truly serve no purpose other than to deny people services and to make sure that profits are as high as possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so why? Whoever thought that was a good idea, that insurance companies should somehow be the middleman.
Well, what goes with that is usually the comment of, well, I don't want government bureaucracy controlling my health care. Instead, I want private insurance bureaucracies.
Right, to control my health care. Right, right. Yeah, there's some interesting counter logic to
yeah.
that. All right. And so I know, Trish, that this is something that's near and dear to your heart. You've been working on this for quite a while. Are we seeing progress and change?
I think I'm encouraged, actually. I'm encouraged by the commitment that has continued from the chair's office.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we have identified some policy change that's doable
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, how we move forward with health, with housing work. I'm encouraged by the city of Portland and their comprehensive plan wanting to have a focus on health.
Mm-hmm.
I'm encouraged by some of the community organizations who are having an impact on advocacy for the recommendations coming forward. I think that it really now, depends on that moving forward, but also the degree to which we engage the community in continuing to let their electeds know, let their county commissioners, their city commissioners, their electeds in Salem know that we want to keep moving this forward and
that
we have this expectation that they consider equity for everybody as they continue to move their policies forward.
Wonderful. And of course, the big fear is whenever there's an economic crisis, going back to Dave's earlier comment, right, equity gets put on the back burner, right? Because it's like, oh, well, we can't focus on that now because, you know, we got this big problem we got to deal with. But if equity was incorporated into all the public policy decisions and all the deliberations, then it wouldn't be this add-on. It would be just part of how we do business as a community. And so I'm hopeful that there'll be enough of us advocating that if not now, when, you know.
And I think that if we really look at it, we are in this crisis now because there was such gross inequity.
That's right.
Because the people who are making the most money are going to create systems that they can continue to create, to make more money.
That's right. That's right.
And the system can't stand.
That's right.
And that's what we're experiencing now. So if more people had been involved, and I think our new president said this, you know, if there had been more controls on the financial system, more oversight, then we wouldn't be here now.
Right.
So as more people get disempowered, the system starts to crumble. We need to see more empowerment.
I absolutely agree with that. We have another caller on the line. Good morning, Jeff. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you, Joanne. Hello, Dave. Hi, guys. The idea, it's very interesting to note that the healthcare people making money at the top levels and so forth, and in this time, the current times, McDonald's has seen record sales because of this $1 menu. And I'm thinking to myself, and you've seen their advertisements, they're aimed squarely at minority groups, blah, blah. And they have done well with this dollar menu because people are not making food at home and the like. But to what effect and to what end, and how can we as a city, a county, and so forth, address the issue of what I call cheap food, F-U-D, food. And that's the relation to our health, and it's dragging us all down. And I'm wondering if you can somehow address the idea that maybe we can at least examine in our own lives these horrible factors of cheap food, but beyond that, do something that collectively.
Well, one thing that Multnomah County recently did was actually pass an ordinance that requires a calorie count to be posted with that food, right? And so I think that that's like a really good first start because I agree with you. I mean, clearly poor communities are overrun with fast food restaurants. So whether
and with the advertisements that are aimed at them.
That's right. And with the advertisements, right. And so,
so maybe we could look instead of on a beer tax, which would crimp so many of us adults in Multnomah County and in Oregon, instead of some of these brewery tax, beer tax, let's look at an actual fat tax, a calorie tax, or something kind of tax that would approach that idea that we're looking out for our health and we're paying extra if we're going to go with this unhealthy options.
So let me see if I get you right. So since liberal Oregon drinks a lot of beer, we shouldn't tax beer,
we should tax it, but we should also tax some of these.
So let me finish my thought based on what you said.
Okay.
So liberal Oregon drinks a lot of beer, and we haven't raised the beer tax in 30 years. Poor people who live in Oregon eat a lot of fast food, right? And so your logic says leave those poor liberals alone with their beer because, you know, they're going to be needing more beer. And
all
let's
right.
just
point well
make those poor people.
Right on,
okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see if I got your point, Jeff. Thank you.
There's got to be some way that we can learn these things. And I know mom and dad are going to look at that thing in the restaurant and they're going to say, ooh, da, da, da. And I know junior and so forth are not.
Right.
And we need to address our like health classes in schools. So we need to start early.
Well, we don't do that anymore, right? We used to have gym classes that were a requirement. We took that out. We don't require gym anymore, right?
Bingo.
So you're right.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. Coming up today on KBOO at 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Anna Keith hosts Family Business. At 10:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Jim Archer about his small portraits of faces at Life Gallery in the Everett Station Lofts. At 11, hear Eric Cascadia, news and commentary with Lim Delta and Chris Andrea. And at 11:15 on Flashpoint, Dr. Mads Gilbert, one of the doctors allowed into Gaza to give emergency medical aid, talks about the effect of the dime, quote-unquote, bombs used by Israel in the recent raids of Gaza. That's what's coming up today on KBOO. I know Trish Tillman has to go. She's a hardworking woman working for the public's health, and we want to thank you so much for being here. If people want to be involved, want to help, can you give them a website where they can get more information? Or I could. actually, if you want to learn more about this the report card on the health of people living in Multnomah County, you can go to www.mchealth.org /HRA/reports. And then you'll come to the report card that gives all the data that we've been talking about this morning. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to have the research to support what we instinctively know. But now we have the research that we can take to policymakers and make good change happen.
And people can also find our website at www.mchealth.org/healthequity. And I think the report card is also on our website as well as other data.
Okay.
They can also give us a call at 988-3030 and then just press 4. That'll take them to the Health Equity Initiative. And we're still happy to come out and do screenings of unnatural causes and have facilitated discussions with whoever in the community group. And one of the things that happened as a result is the library bought 10 copies of the documentary. So they're available
at
the library.
At Multnomah County Library.
Yes.
Excellent.
So,
thank you so, so much.
Thank
we appreciate
you,
having
much.
You here.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here on KBOO.
Likewise. Well, wonderful. So, I was going to say, well, not so wonderful. What we know is that we've still got a lot of work to do, but we've got some wonderful folks that are really focused on making sure as healthcare reform moves forward that we're looking at it from an equity lens and that we're making sure that everybody benefits from reforming our healthcare system and that everybody has the opportunity to live in a very healthy community.
And I suppose we should be optimistic in the fact that last Tuesday, the president put health care back on the front burner in his address and has made it clear that something's going to happen on that, which will presumably open more doorways for addressing the disparity issues as well as just the straightforward economic coverage issues.
Well, it's interesting that the hospital associations in Oregon came out with a report full of doom and gloom about what would happen if a provider tax was implemented to pay for health care. It's kind of sad when you think, of course, the powers that be want to continue the status quo because the status quo is what has worked for them. But unfortunately, we have a system that only works for the top echelon, the top income makers are the only people that have good health outcomes. And so, why would we not want to just totally do away with the current system and start from scratch?
Yeah, well, it's not even going to be sustainable for the health insurance industry. As more and more Americans become uninsured, they're losing their base of paying customers.
That's
so
right.
Eventually it'll just be those white guys in suits down on Wall Street or something that are getting the health care.
That's right.
And I'm optimistic because I actually think that perhaps the president has gotten it mm-hmm. and is going to push the Congress forward on this, realizing that, finally, hey, the American people, this has been a number one issue for a long time.
That's
and
right.
Now's the time to do it.
And it was the number one issue during the last campaign. It even surpassed the war. Much as people want wars to end, they knew that if we didn't fix the healthcare system, then we would not have the resources to do any of the other stuff that we have to
do. And it's been a constant now for several years.
That's
Americans have been have realized long before the pundits and the policymakers did that the system is broken. It's not serving anybody but a very privileged few, and we need to do something.
And so it would be my hope that people would write to their state legislators, that they would get on their email alert systems and find out when these hearings are taking place in Salem. I mean, right now, there is a major bill, House Bill 2009, that is actually the framework to create universal health care. That bill is in Representative Mitch Greenlick's committee, and he's been moving mountains trying to move that bill forward. There was a legislative hearing on that bill in Grants Pass earlier this week, and they had standing room only. People took off and did not go to work that morning so they could fill that room to let legislators know that they want it done now. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear the excuses about how bad the budget is and, you know, we got to cut. And so at the same time that's happening, you have to look at the budget that the governor put together and say, what is wrong with the picture that the governor is painting about Oregon? And the picture that the governor has painted is we're going to disinvest in the neediest people in our community because we're going to plan for 20 years from now. We're going to focus on building transportation projects. We're going to focus on construction. We're not going to focus on the needs of seniors in our community, the needs of rate of people that are unemployed, the homeless. It's like we can't do anything about that. So we're going to focus on what's going to be productive 10 or 20 years from now.
Well, and I think the point that Obama was making on Tuesday night is extremely applicable to what's wrong with Kulongowski's approach, which is the healthcare issue is such an integral part.
That's right.
Excuse me. Such an integral part of a healthy economy as well as a healthy citizenry.
That's right.
That to ignore it is going to erode and undermine any other efforts.
That's absolutely.
I mean, it's an incredible drain, not just on the personal impacts people are experiencing, but you know, from an economic point of view, it's an incredible drain on businesses, in terms of both the cost of providing health care and the cost of the loss of productivity when your workers aren't well covered by health care insurance.
That's right.
And you know, this seems to be something that Ted doesn't quite get. Although I personally think that Ted seems to be more interested in investing in the legacy of Ted Kulongowski than he is in the welfare of the people of Oregon.
Wow.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not. It's not that I, you know.
Right.
But well, I just do. I think that, you know, we are seeing a man who has decided, you know, by his policies that now I don't want to attribute, you know, really venal causes like he's planning on running for a Senate seat or something like that. But I do, you know, I do question, is he that much out of touch with what the situation is in Oregon?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you with that. I think that there is truly a disconnect from what's happening to people right on the ground, right? And I'm hopeful that we have some legislative leadership that actually really pushes back. I mean, in economic hard times, you cut services to seniors. I mean, that's mm-hmm. like, that's criminal.
Yeah.
In economic hard times, you do away with alcohol and drug treatment, knowing that in economic hard times, those services become more necessary than ever. You know, there's such a disconnect between what the community needs are and where the investments are going.
Well, as long as we're on this roll here, and the other thing that bothers me is, you know, this 5% pay cut he's volunteered to take. It's like, Ted, get out of the executive office, go visit the local unemployment division,
right,
and see where a whole bunch of Oregonians are giving up a lot more than 5% of their income.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, to me, I suppose he thinks it's noble. I think it's really insulting to the vast majority of Oregonians who are struggling to get by.
Right. I absolutely agree with that. And I guess, you know, I'll do one last dig at Oregon. You know, I don't know if you saw the big picture on the front page of the Oregonian that was the Happy Birthday Oregon celebration.
Ah, yes.
I couldn't help but look at that picture and say, does that really reflect Oregon? And I didn't think it did at all. It was once again a pretty disappointing display if we were talking about all of Oregon, because all of Oregon certainly was not represented in that state capitol that day. And so we've kind of like just blown up the phone lines. Apparently, there are other folks that want to weigh in on this. So let's just go back to the phone line and say, good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning, caller. Welcome. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
They're speechless before our wisdom.
Hello. Hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, I wasn't connected yet.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. But this is an odd thing. I called last week to Central City Concern. It's a medical. It offers medical help.
Right.
I have cash.
Okay.
He said, "What is your insurance company?" He was going to make me an appointment, and I said, "Well, I'll pay you cash when I come in the door. I have cash."
Right.
He said, "No, we don't take cash. We only take insured people." And you know, I melted. It was the big emotional meltdown.
Right. Right.
Because that they would only accept insurance money, not personal money. I find really exclusive to humanity.
Right.
I am a person who can give them the money that they want, but they don't want my money. They want the money that goes through that third route that does no medical anything, just does the paper shuffling.
That's right.
And, you know, I just was really upset. I don't think that's right. I think if you need medical help and you can pay for it, but you don't have the insurance company, you know, you're not insured, that you should be accepted as a patient.
Right. So I
was really upset.
I understand that.
You should be.
But now Central City Concern is a community-based organization that serves primarily people who have no resources, right? So, and they have contracts with the county and with the state to provide specific health services. Were there community health clinics in the neighborhood that you could have gone to?
I've got here my list. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And about half of them are churches. Those were my referrals that I've gotten. And it's okay. I mean, I'm going to be okay. It's
right.
Just that the shock of not getting help through an agency that could really help you. You know, that I don't understand why I'm excluded.
Right. Well, and that's why we have to reform our healthcare system,
yes.
Right? Because any door should be accessed to a provider of your choice, right, when you need it.
Well, what was the name? I'm old. What was the name of the governor that did the Oregon Health Plan?
It was Dr. Kitzhopper.
It was Kitzhopper, yeah. Now, the Oregon Health Plan, when I was working, I'm retired now. When I was working, that was what all of our clients had.
Right.
And then as the governors changed, the Oregon Health Plan lost its oomph.
That's right. Well, I mean, quite frankly, it was because of the legislative leadership did not have the Oregon Health Plan as a priority, right?
Yeah, boy, you're not kidding. All of our clients do, and... And Dave, all of them were on the Oregon Health Plan.
Uh-huh.
And that was really important. And then they went to this halfway kind of plan, which I forget the name of.
Oh, yeah, it was the plus, right?
Yeah, it was some
right.
weird thing.
That's
and,
right.
And now what's the name of that governor? I forgot already.
Kitzhopper.
Kitzhopper had been, I think he was like an emergency hospital
That's right, physician,
nurse.
Right. Physician.
Physician. Down in
Medicaid.
That's right.
Oh. Anyway, so that was the reason he knew the importance of it.
That's right.
Because, you know, that's all of our clients go to the hospital.
That's right.
None of them have anything.
That's right.
I mean, I'm retired now. But anyway, so here I was calling with, you know, cash in my hand to get the help I needed from, I had been told this particular place would, was what I needed. So anyway, reform.
Reform, yes.
Reform,
it's up to us to make it happen, and we can make it happen this legislative session. Thank you so much for your call.
Bye, John.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I haven't heard all of your discussion. I had to work. The big issue, I think, is that the money for this is going to be a little hard to shake loose in these troubled times, and it's well and good to say, oh, cover everybody and do it right now. But if you can't get any bipartisan support, it's hard to get anything passed, and the Republicans are going to say, oh, you're just tax and spend liberals, and we don't have the money, and, you know, we need to have more tax cuts.
Right.
I don't know where this dough is coming from. You know, TriMet's cutting way back because their payroll tax income is going way down because people are being laid off.
That's right.
There's a lot of loops going on here that are interlocking, and I...
Well, you know...
Well, you know, sometimes you're stuck with a lousy set of options. In an ideal world, we wouldn't want to have to be incurring tremendous amounts of debt. However, we don't have the...
Luxury?
The luxury, thank you, of really looking at it that way, at least on the short term. The fact of the matter is, if we look historically, what's happened when countries in economic peril like we're in right now begin shutting down, try to impose a budgetary constraints rather than go into debt, it's only exacerbated the problem. For example, in 1933, the New Deal is launched. We see the economy actually begin to recover. The stock market even recovered. Then Roosevelt made the mistake of listening to other advisors who said, well, we've kind of kick-started things. Now let's begin trying to balance the budget. He began making cutbacks, trying to do sort of the Republican approach. What happened? He threw the country back into a deeper depression. The stock market crashed. The deflationary spiral picked up again. So we're really kind of in a situation where, hey, we've got to put the IV on the patient. We've got to keep the monitoring going. And maybe we don't know how we're going to pay the medical bill. But the options are that or the patient is flatlined. So I think we just have to bite the bullet, move forward, and do it. And as far as the Republicans... Well, you know, I think that what's more important is what the American people want. And as a number of polls have shown following the president's address, especially in mentioning health care, mm-hmm. he is enjoying record support.
That's
and
right.
I think, in terms of the Republican Party right now, once they get their act together and become a real party rather than what it is right now, which is sort of this rump party composed of extremist Southerners, then, maybe we can talk about real bipartisanship.
And I want to say, if you want to talk about where do we get the money, again, I go back to the insurance companies. The insurance companies serve no purpose except to make enormous profit. If we're about people getting healthy, then it should be about my relationship with my healthcare provider. Insurance companies' role is to deny people and to make sure they get record profits. I mean, right now we have Providence is about to increase their rates by some exorbitant amount, right? And you got to ask yourself, how much profit is too much profit?
Right.
And so in regard to the Republicans, we don't need the Republicans this legislative session. There's a supermajority of Democrats in the House. There's a supermajority in the Senate. What we need is true political leadership to push forward an agenda. And they can either sit on the sideline or they can be part of helping us with the solution to our health care problem.
Agreed. But the big picture includes having these kind of reforms made sustainable.
Oh, right. But they.
Well, if Obama and company, roll over the top of the Republicans, which they've been kind of doing so far, and the Republicans are making themselves increasingly irrelevant.
Right, that's right.
But we got four more years, and then we got God knows who, Jeb Bush, Sarah Palin. They're not sleeping. People are not sleeping on the other side, and they're trying to. Foment discord in the gross populace. If everybody's taxes go up and everybody's services go down, it's going to make much more fertile ground for them to spread their ideology again.
No question about that. And we know that they're working overtime, right? But right now, the perception of the public is how stupid and obstructionist they are, right? So rather than actually helping them rebuild the party, what they're doing, their actions, their public actions right now are really showing the public just really what's been behind that Republican veneer for so long. You know, they want their folks to get as much money as possible and be damn with the rest of us. And that's becoming clearer and clearer. So thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. We got to reform our healthcare system, and we got to do it now.
That's right.
Okay, we got other callers on the line. Hello, caller. Welcome to KBOO. Hello?
Sounds like a very young caller.
Yeah, even the babies want to get in on this healthcare reform, by golly. Hello, are you there? Okay, I guess that caller is not there. But it's clear that this is an issue that is near and dear to folks' heart. We've got another caller on the line. Hello, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. My name is Jean, and I am calling about television advertising. It's a real issue with me in that they advertise junk food, and I think they should be required to state the value of their food, you know, the how many calories, you know, how much fat, how much salt, and stuff like that, because people of low income watch a lot of TV, and I think they're very influenced by
advertising.
Television says. And the other issue is they advertise junk food, and then they turn around in their segments, and they talk about healthy living, you know, which is, I mean, they're at opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to that. So,
that's right.
That is all I wanted to say.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that is, so those companies paid money to that TV station, that radio station, to paint a picture, right?
Right.
And that's like the free market at its worst, right? Because if you've got the money to be able to paint a picture, then you get to paint that picture. And so are you proposing that we change the advertisement feel so that anytime anybody buys advertisement, it has to be some truth in advertisement?
That's a good idea.
Wow. We're, you know.
We're really getting radical today. Thank you so much. We appreciate your call.
Okay, and thanks for being there. Love your show.
Thank you so much. You know, it says that on Regency Blue Cross and Blue Shield earned its $1.5 billion in total premiums last year. $1.5 billion. Now, and again, I have to keep asking, so why do we have insurance companies again?
Well, you know, it's a jobs program.
It's a jobs program, but not for the rest of us. And what we know is that the trend for premiums has been the actual surplus. So here's a good number for folks. And so people wonder why I'm always picking on insurance companies. Here's a good number. So Blue Cross and Blue Shield from 2008, as of September 2008, had $520.9 billion. That's with a B. And surplus revenue, right? So that's the profit that they made off of denying people insurance coverage, off of limiting who has access and who gets care, $520.9 billion.
And we're going to have to leave it on that happy note. Now, we were going to talk about Project Implicit this today, but we didn't really get a chance to because healthcare kind of took the lead. But we'll pick that up at a later program.
Yes, we will.
But you need to get out there and do things about this. And if you want to find out more about the health initiative, you can log on to our blog site at kboo.fm/voicesfromtheedge. Hit blog. We've got the links and information there about it.
And I'm Joanne Bowman.
And I'm Dave Mazza.
And you've been listening to Voices from the Edge. See you next week, same time, same place, same channel.